You're listening to Gamesforum's Mobilize and Monetize podcast. Dive into the world of mobile gaming with us as we explore the latest trends and discuss best practices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mobilize and Monetize. As always, I'm your host, Mariam, here at Gamesforum. I'm the head of content. And joining me today, I've got CK Wang, who is co-founder and CEO of Koo Apps. CK, thank you so much for taking the time to come on today.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for having me, Mariam.
So today's episode is going to be a really interesting one for those who are in the indie game development space and interested in indie games in general, I think. So CK, diving straight in, you know, you've got a wealth of experience in this area, and I'm sure people are really, you know,
I feel like I'm a dinosaur.
Glean some gems of knowledge here. So can you share a bit about your background and the journey that sort of led you to co-found Koo Apps?
Yeah, definitely. So I started my career at Microsoft Game Studios, played games growing up, everything, StarCraft, Warcraft. I still play StarCraft 2 now.
Great game.
I play Zerg. 160, 180 APMs. So I think I'm capped at Diamond, but played games growing up, love it, and so really wanted to work on games. Started at Microsoft Game Studios, thought it was a game studio, but I was actually on the publishing side, not quite on the game studio side.
And,
loved my time there, learned a ton. I think, you know, we wouldn't be here today without my experience there. But later on, I moved to Microsoft Research, worked on machine learning, three token language models. And then after that, I was like, hey, you know, I think this is kind of too early. So it turns out I was, 8 years too early. But then later on, left to start this studio with a couple of buddies, a middle school best friend, a college best friend, and then another friend from college as well. And so, that's how we got started. And yeah, fast forward, 10 plus years, we're here today with, 200 people and and growing.
It is
definitely not easy. Yeah. It's definitely not easy. We work really hard, but we're loving it. We're having a lot of fun.
I love that you turned your sort of passion for gaming into a company. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, even when I'm at Microsoft, I think we're building like apps and games on the side as a hobby. And then when it was like, hey, this is really sure what we're going to do, that's when, I decided to leave. And I was at Microsoft for 5 years. I loved my time there. It was really smart people and learned a ton.
I can imagine,
just felt like,
in the tech industry.
Yes. For sure. And especially Microsoft Research, well ahead of their time. Just felt like, a smaller team, we could move faster and do more things and take over the world. And so, yeah.
So you kind of gave me a speed run through Koo Apps and your journey, but I wanted to sort of ask you, what specific challenges did you face in the early stages of Koo Apps? Those interested in the space probably sort of wanting to know. And how did you sort of override them and overcome them while maintaining that indie spirit?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we've gone through like all the waves. It's kind of funny, but I remember like 2008 to 2011 and even 12, there's actually no game engines. This is prior to Unity. I remember Unity V1 was kind of like dead on arrival because it was, 50 megabyte download for like a Hello World project with no game. And at the time, you could only download apps via 3G or 2G if they were under 10 megabytes on an iPhone. So if it was over 10 megabytes, you couldn't download in the area. You have to connect to Wi-Fi, and people, of course, forgot. And so that killed like sort of 80% of your download. So when we started, there was no game engine.
Wow.
The first game we made was a native game, and it used native UI animations. And so what ended up happening was there was no game loop, so you couldn't pause. So we made a conveyor belt sushi game, and the most requested feature was a pause for the game.
Oh, really?
and we couldn't pause because there was no game engine. And so and we didn't know how to write game engines from scratch. And so we just built it off of like people UI elements. So like when, when a customer comes in and then like, and then there's like a timer and you go, okay, the customer's going to leave. Like there's no pause. Mm. And then like our sushi kept going around the conveyor belt. And then so it was like a fire and forget animation. And so you couldn't pause it. so it was really, really funny when our engineers, we were like 2 weeks, our release candidate was like 2 weeks before release. I was like, wait a sec, there's no pause. I had showed it to a friend. And then they're like, where's the pause button? I'm like, you're right. Every game has a pause
It's one of
button.
those things that I'd imagine you don't actually think about until you're actually playing the game. You're like, wait a second, this is a major
That's
feature
correct.
that's missing.
That's correct. And it's also not one of those things you would think is hard to add in. It's just
Right.
like,
Especially like for
like,
someone who's not in the games development side, like you would never imagine that that's something that
that's
requires so
correct.
much sort of, tech.
Exactly. And so, so we shipped the game without a pause button, and we were never able to add the pause button, even, two,
No.
3 years after. But this game was, the first game we launched, instant success.
Nice.
This was like 2009, and so by that was pre-in-app purchase, pre-ad networks. There was no UA. Everything was organic. We listed the app for as a paid app because that was the only way to monetize. And we got, I think we listed it first for $3, then later for $1. We got a few hundred thousand downloads. It was yeah, it was that was our seed funding. We were profitable from that. Later on, Angry Birds was the first to innovate the freemium model, where they released the free version of the app, that got a lot of people to try it so they could download the paid version. And we followed suit, and our free version got like, I think, 3 million downloads. And so, that was, 2009, 2010, 2011. And that really kick started the studio. And at the time, it was a hobby, but money came in, and I was like, wow, like we could do this for business, and let's start doing it.
That's
And
awesome.
so that's how we got started. Those were the challenges early day, was mostly on the technology. And Objective C was not a very well understood language. The Mac OS system was much smaller in market share. So when we Google searched, like we couldn't really find anything.
Right. You guys were
And
kind of
yeah,
doing everything like from scratch, is what I'm hearing.
yeah. Yeah, everything from
There was no
scratch. I
reference
remember
point.
there was no reference point. There was nothing on the App Store. When we launched like our first app on the App Store, like the iTunes Store did not have an App Store. It was like
Wow.
music, podcast, and then apps. And then like that was it. Like there was no ranking, there's no categories, there was no apps versus games. Only games make money because apps, there people are like, oh, what are these things? And games like,
Right.
oh, okay, that's kind of fun. And it
Yeah.
went viral first. So the first like I think 3 to 5 years of the App Store existence, like, was mostly games that people played, and apps came in later. And Uber, even Uber was 2014, I think. That was like 5 years after the App Store. And so, no, it was just Wild West days, very, very different. Mostly it was whoever got an app working would succeed. I would say it was from 2008 to 2012, 13. From 2012, 13, the market got kind of competitive. That's when all the game developers like Zynga realized that mobile was going to be larger than Facebook games. From 2007 to 2011, the entire casual gaming space was like, oh yeah, Facebook games is the next big thing. And Zynga, started that trend. And so all of them are focused on Facebook games, which was true at the time initially, because you could just access all of your friends' data and send them info and get them to play with you. It's very, very social.
Right.
Later on, they start clamping down on that, but mobile started taking off, and people only started realizing that, I think, 2011, 2012. And so that's when the really big game developers came in. So that's when Supercell started, 2011, 2012. That's when the quality of games started becoming really, really high. And our next challenge was, our first challenge was, how do we make a game? There's no game engine. Next challenge is, how do we make a good game? Like, now that all of these, AAA studios are competing with us, how can we amp up the quality of our games? And then later on, I think 2016, 17, it was like UA, like, how do we do UA? And we really, figure out UA until 2020, when we really started doing UA. So just the evolution of the mobile industry has been pretty interesting. It's first like, tech, then game design, then UA, and all of that. So.
So you mentioned the limitations of tech, just briefly, but with the limited budgets that do come along with indie developers, what sort of strategies have proven most effective for co-ops in terms of UA and how do you measure their success?
Definitely. First off, we are self-funded, so we can't really spend a lot of money on UA without first proving that it works. And
Right.
so I actually think we have one of the most unique strategies, where we spend $10 to $15 a day on our test campaign. The conventional wisdom there would be like, what can you get with $10, $15? Can you go buy a Starbucks coffee?
Yeah.
But actually, we target India and Philippines, and we're able to get we start off with 20 cents per install, but we actually are able to get 3 cents per install, sometimes 2 cents in certain cases. And so with that, you can get like a few hundred installs, make sure you have no bugs, make sure you don't have any crashes, make sure you have your tutorial funnel completion, make sure you have, just general like working, game and that people are engaging. You can't really test in that purchase with that for sure. You got to test it in tier one countries. There's way less in-app purchase buyers in tier three countries. That is all true. But that's actually why I do talks on this, and I talk, gave a talk at GDC last year. Our best advice is actually ad monetized games. In that purchase-based games, you gotta spend like at least mid six digits on UA to get a reasonable cohort of in-app purchase buyers to run your A/B tests. If you want to run an A/B test, you gotta have at least 300 sample size on A and B, like the control and the variant. And what ends up happening is if you have 600 payers and you in-app purchase conversion rate is 1%, then that's like 60,000. Daily active users, of which 600 are payers, and 60,000 daily active users, you're probably spending like a couple hundred thousand, and so that's just like way out of reach for indie studios. You gotta have like huge VC funding for that, and so I would say for indie studios, start with small test budgets, $10, $20. Start with tier three countries. Start with ad monetization, because ad monetization, you're monetizing everybody. You're out monetizing 100% of your cohort of your users instead of just 1% of users that buy an app purchase, and so. And over time, this 1% has actually gotten less because all of these large companies have gotten so good at targeting. And so they take all of these in-app purchase buyers and spenders. And so it's really like, 0.3% nowadays. And so, yeah, I would say ad monetize, test carefully, test small budget, and yeah, and grow steadily. Yeah.
Interesting stuff, CK. I don't think we could I don't think I could interview you and sort of not ask you about the success of Snake.io, especially as an indie games developer. So obviously Snake.io has been a massive hit. I think you mentioned 100, you guys were sort of like over the moon and excited about 100,000 downloads, but Snake.io has over 400 million downloads. So can you share the inspiration behind this game? What were the challenges you faced, and what sort of led to its success? What are some, key takeaway tips for those who are in the indie game development space?
Yeah. Prior to Snake.io, we were a word game studio. So Pick the Word was our first big success. Instantly climbed the top 20 on the charts organically. And that really funded the studio after our sushi game. So it's a sushi game, and then Sushi Sushi House, and then Pick the Word. And then in 2019, we actually acquired Snake.io from a Turkish developer that wanted to move towards mid-core games. And so prior to that, we hadn't made any hyper-casual games. We weren't familiar with hyper-casual games. They were like, hey, we kind of don't want to work on hyper-casual anymore. Kind of not that interesting. The games aren't that deep. We want to sell this. Do you guys want to buy it? And so we ended up buying it from them, and they ended up using the money to fund the mid-core studio. So we were, and we accidentally stumbled upon hyper-casual games. But when we looked at it, we're like, hey, this is, there's no, these snakes don't have any eyes, like don't have any, there's no characters, there's no IP, there's no art in this game. There's no, actually, when we acquired it, it was single player, it wasn't real-time multiplayer. And we quickly added real-time multiplayer. And so, yeah, it was just, we stumbled upon hyper-casual, but we looked at it and said, hey, we're gamers, what would we want in like a full-fledged game? And so we started adding everything. So we redid all the art, we added progression, we added live events, we added real-time multiplayer, we launched real-time one in 2021. We just added so many things to the game that you would normally think is in a normal game. And we just added it, and retention started going up, LTV started going up. I'd say the biggest thing is for sure live events. There's a lot of games out there. There's a lot of noise. The way to keep our users engaged really is live events. And we launched live events, I believe, fall Q4 of 2020. We skyrocketed from that. And so we ship new content every single month. We have four new skins every single month. Three of them are objective based, and you can unlock them for free as long as you hit the objectives. So it's like a certain score or a certain number of wins against other snakes. And then the last one is leaderboard, and that actually has been doing really, really well for us, where only you get slotted into a bracket leaderboard, and you got to rank top 200 out of 500 snakes and so competitors. And these are real players that you're competing with on the event leaderboard. And yeah, only 200 or a little bit less than half of the players will get the skin, will get the boss skin. And so they end up competing and all of that. And it's definitely very, very competitive. Our number one complaint actually with the game right now is that it's like, hey, like I was top 200. How come not 200 anymore? And we're like, sorry,
Can't
we
help you
checked
with
your
that.
we checked your logs and you didn't play the last 3 hours of the event.
Yeah.
A bunch of people beat you, but we'll comp you the skin. You've been playing for a long time. You know, that's like our number one complaint
That's
in the game.
funny.
And so because of that, like we've had to ship something we call like last chance pop-up, where like if you were 200 and you dropped out of it and the event ended, it will give you one more chance to beat like the 200th person.
Yeah.
And it's like a static sort of target that you're trying to beat. Because the event has ended already, and so we've implemented that, and now people are complaining about that. So it's like not clear what it is. So we had to like ship like a V2 version of that like feature, and
Right.
so yeah, people care a lot about their skins and their new content. And so yeah, we work really hard on that. We're constantly improving and polishing that experience. Yeah, everybody wants to win. I think that's the difference between casual gaming
Yeah.
and mid-core and hardcore. I think mid-core and hardcore players, they understand it's, you know, it's a 50-50% win rate. They understand it's like Elo effect and all of that. The better you are, you play with stronger players, you're never going to win more than 50% at the time or 51% at the time.
True.
But casual gaming, it's not like that. Like people want to win or win big. Like it's nobody wants to lose. And
Even if
so,
there's so many players, like I almost feel like it's an ego thing. Like this game's hyper casual. Like I should be winning.
Totally, totally. And so we've had to a lot, ship a lot of features just to cater to that
Right.
emotion that like I'm expecting to win here. Like
Yeah.
this is a casual game. Like this is not like, you know, hardcore game. And so it's kind of interesting.
That's amazing. So my key takeaway from that, you guys have stumbled, you just happened to stumble across your most successful game, and it was just all amazing from there. So CK, I want to ask you, for those who are in the indie game development space, what are the sort of key elements that indie developers should focus on to create a sustainable, sort of engaging mobile game? And what sort of advice can you offer them? You know, you're in this space, you're successful. I'm sure there's many that are looking to you right now and thinking, well, how can we do this?
I would say, you know, for sure, like working really hard, like the space is very competitive. You really gotta have as many shots on goal as you
Yeah.
can. You know, I think Angry Birds was like their 50th game before they launched Angry Birds. And so the first 49 were, you know, failed.
Yeah.
In our case, we were lucky that we were so early where there were no games. I think we launched app number 100 on the App Store with the SCP flashcard app. And when we launched our game, it was like maybe app number 2000. Like, so
Right.
now there's like 2000 apps launched every day. And so we kind of got lucky with the timing. But I think even when we were lucky with the timing, I think the hard work really paid off. You know, co-founders and I, like, we work like 80 hours a week, and we've done that for the past like 15 years. Like, you know, it's really a marathon. You
Right.
really,
And it's a grind, it seems like. I mean, you guys
and
really,
that's
really work
totally a
hard.
grind. And it's totally a grind. There's so many you know, there's so many changes in the industry that is outside of our control,
Right.
to say the least. And so we just, you know, gotta adapt. We just gotta change the way we do things. We just gotta grow and learn. And you know, when we started, there was no ad networks, we had to learn that. When we started, there's no in-app purchase, we had to learn that. When we started, a lot of the UI, a lot of, I mean, the phone aspect ratios, the phone touches were all different. There's no vibration on phones, like in for games and all of that. Like just everything was different. We just
Yeah.
constantly growing. I think that's part of the fun. Like you never are bored. Like, you know, I think our team, if I told them they would work on a banking software that would just stay the same for the next 10 years, as long as it showed your bank account and had the right
Yeah.
number, you know, I think they would cry
And potentially quit, yeah.
and definitely quit, potentially
Yeah.
quit. But I think that's what I think everybody coming to this game, into this industry, is looking forward to that
Right.
fun and that the dynamic environment, and it's very colorful, it's very fun. But the side effect of that is you're constantly learning, and while learning sounds fun, it means that you're gonna have to put in the extra time to learn it. And so that's my first advice. My second advice is for sure to work with people you love working with. I know so many other teams that are struggling and ultimately shut down, and 70% of it is really just co-founder disputes.
Wow.
And so in our case, like, we're just so lucky. Solon, it's my middle school best friend. I grew up in the Philippines. We grew up playing LAN parties, came to my house every other
That's amazing. You
Sunday,
guys have known
Saturday,
each
every
other
other
for
weekend.
ages since middle
Yeah, I've known
school.
each other for middle school, decades,
Crazy.
2 to 3 decades. And so and then John, my co-founder here, we're college roommates. We're a random luck draw at Stanford. Freshman year roommates, stuck together for years. As a groomsmen at his wedding, his groomsmen at my wedding,
Wow.
and we're best friends in college, and we've been known each other for 2 decades now.
Right. So don't underestimate sort of those foundational long-term relationships. I think what you said really hit the nail. Like, you guys really got lucky. I think you guys are, beat that 70% statistic.
We were really lucked out. I mean, the fact that I met Solon, that was a luck. The fact that I met John, that was luck.
Right.
The fact that I met Steph, who was our who actually designed all of our games. She's our head of game design, co-founder and head of game design. And so I met her at Stanford as well, and that was all luck. And so I think being able to work with people that you enjoy working with, that that you can go through all the hard times with, I think is, we've definitely had hard times. It's a roller coaster. It's not straight line up,
Right.
for sure. And so that's all, has sort of helped us go through all the hard times.
So, CK, I want to ask you a sort of broad question, and that is on the topic of data analytics. And the reason I want to ask this is just because there's so much being talked about within this space. It's kind of unavoidable. But what are your sort of thoughts from the indie game development lens on the evolving role of data analytics in indie game development, and how does Kuap sort of utilize data to refine its games?
Fortunately, we're large enough now to be able to build our own in-house BI tool. So we actually have something we call internally Phoenix Cloud, and it automates every single release. So every single release we do, it automates all the data gathering. It runs the A/B test. It tells us, like, hey, in this build, game complete engagement is lower, is 20% lower. You might want to check this. People are spending, 10% less minutes or more. The good news, and retention is, X amount higher, ARPDAU, LTV. So fortunately, now we've been able to automate that. But I think even without that, I think for indie game developers, just broad stroke, like, make sure you look at retention, make sure you look at all the funnels, early life cycle, mid life cycle, make sure you look at, like, push notification open rates, make sure you look at minutes per day and sessions. So there's maybe like 5 to 10 numbers that, like, you broadly follow. And I think that would be like a very good North Star that can get you like sort of 70% of the way there.
Right.
And I'd highly recommend Tengen. We've used Tengen for, gosh, I think, 6, 7, 8 years. And it's definitely helped us transform how we look at data, including especially UA data and ad monetization data. We would not be here today without Tengen. I think our UA spend with the help of Tengen. And so knowing where you're spending your UA and making sure that you're spending it wisely in the most efficient way is really, really key. And so I'd say, also Firebase. We use Firebase a lot. So, like, Firebase, Tengen, and then broad sort of retention data, you can get actually quite far. And it's really about, like, following that closely and making sure each of our releases, we're going, we're stable and nothing is dropping. I've seen a lot of products where the team gets really excited. It's like, oh yeah, I want to make this new feature. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. They launch it. They don't look at the data. Turns out, like, that's not what customers want. I think B2C is very, very different from B2B. B2B, I think your customers will tell you what they want,
All right.
because there are businesses that will use that to, sell to the customers, so they know exactly what they need, in terms of their productivity and workflow, most of the time. But B2C, it's, like most of the time they don't know what they want, right? Like I
Yeah.
think Henry Ford, his most famous phrase was, if I asked what my customers wanted, they would have told me they wanted a faster horse.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not what he built. And so, it's yeah, it, you know, it's really unpredictable, and that's part of the fun. I think consumer trends
Yeah.
change a lot. We're having to redesign UI UX every 2 or 3 years. We're actually in the middle of a huge reskin for Snake.io. We're going to be launching that Q3, Q4 this year, the later half of this
Nice.
year. We're redesigning the whole game. We're super excited. It looks beautiful. Every single person we've shown it to internally and all of our play tests have said, like, wow, this is like, yeah, a whole new refresh. And
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah, I
so
can't wait to see it.
it's really, really exciting. And so consumer trends, just even just art styles,
Yeah.
I think change every 2 or 3 years, and that's what keeps it exciting. Our artists are always excited to redraw everything and make it look amazing, follow the latest trends, whether it's pixel or 3D or cartoony or anime, following those trends and make sure that like we're constantly growing and keeping up with consumer trends. And so yeah, it's what our team loves to do. But I think for indie studios, I think it's very, very important. And I think it actually is one of our biggest edges, is that like we're able to adapt quicker than large companies. Perhaps a large company would take like 6 months to do user research, to debate. There's a lot of, cooks in the kitchen, and some think this style, some think that style. And so maybe it takes them 6 months to get green light, and takes them like another year to release it. As an indie studio, you can really move faster than that, right? Like you
Right.
can really decide and, decide over a weekend and go, yeah, like let's try this and try it over the next 2 weeks. And if it works, great. If it doesn't work, try something else. And so that's really, one of our gifts.
Absolutely, that's really interesting stuff. So last question for you, ACK, and one that I think you'll be able to offer some pretty good advice on for those listening and interested in the space, but in your experience, what are the most sort of attainable goals for indie game developers with limited resources? And how can they go about setting sort of realistic milestones to achieve long-term success? Because, as we know, that's what everyone wants, indie or not. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
For sure. And I actually think we can do a lot. So I hope indies stay excited and keep developing for mobile and don't give up. Stay
Right.
strong, fight. We can do it. But when I started, like the hardest part was the technology. Marketing was easy because there's nothing on the market. Now it's kind of like the reverse. Like building the game now is the easy part. Like the Unity is really good, Godot is really good. There's a lot of good game engines out there that make building, the game that you envision, the game that you want to play, the game that you think is special, that you want to build, is so much easier now. And so definitely go do that. Definitely build it. Definitely build it quickly. Definitely test. The way we test games actually is we'll build a hyper-casual prototype, and we'll actually launch that. And so this prototype is using like Unity Asset Store art. Our internal artists don't even work on it. We build just the core mechanic. There's not much content. There's maybe like one day of content. So we're talking like half an hour of content for a hardcore gamer, or an hour of content. We launch it. We measure day one retention. And then if it worked, great. If it doesn't work, we pivot, right? So we're able to do that in 4 weeks. We ship a new prototype every 4 weeks. So I would say, yeah, definitely build a game that you really enjoy, that you really want to build. Test quickly and pivot quickly. Oftentimes, we're probably not correct. I would say, maybe 95% of our new game prototypes fail. And I think that that's pretty common in the gaming
Yeah.
space. And so test quickly, pivot quickly, look at the data. And then as you test, like, spend small budget. Like, with us, we spend it on Google Ads. $10, $20 a day budget on Google Ads, targeting Philippines and India can get you pretty far, certainly enough to test whether or not, this core mechanic works.
Right. Fantastic. Really interesting stuff. CK, thank you so much for your time. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but this is definitely one of my favorite podcast episodes I've done because it's just been so
Thank you.
fascinating. Yeah, thank you so much for your time. And for those who are listening, that was it for this week's Mobilize and Monetize. Until next time.